threat of death.
Individual people have the questions. Okay, next, Dr. Sandy Wallace. Professor Wallace is chair of the Economics Department at Georgia State University in Atlanta. Her PhD in economics from Syracuse, MA from Syracuse, and BA from William Smith College. Phi Beta Kappa, director of the Fiscal Research Center at the Andrew Young School of Policy Studies at Georgia State. Literally traveled global on issues of tax policy, fiscal decentralization, revenue modeling and forecasting, Guatemala, Uzbekistan, Russia, Kazakhstan, India, the Dominican Republic, Pakistan, Nepal, China, Philippines, Ukraine, and South Africa. Served as a financial economist for the U.S. Treasury Department Office of Tax Analysis. Published several textbooks, Article 2, newest dimension, chapter on evolving financial structure, architecture of state and local governments, and a recently released handbook on state and local government finance. And if her name sounds vaguely familiar, it's because she worked on the Syracuse tax studies here in Nebraska, but she's a PhD candidate at Syracuse.
Yeah, I've been here before. I've
been here before. Well, thank you, Dr. Wallace. We appreciate you coming back.
Well, I appreciate the chance to come back.
We're still in business, aren't we? We still have a Nebraska.
That's one of the good things about taxes. We'll always be in business if we study taxes. You can sort of feel doubly sorry for my family. My husband's also an economist with the Internal Revenue Service, so we're not real popular at parties, but we know our taxes, or we know some about taxes. It's a real pleasure to be back here with you, and Dave and I appreciate the chance to be working to hopefully provide some input that's useful to you with your deliberations. My job, as I understood it, was to talk about, in general, individual income taxes. So Dave took the corporate side, and I'm taking it from the perspective of individuals. And what I hope to do in my brief time with you, sort of similar to Dave, is talk in general first of why you want to have an individual income tax in your system. Not every state does. We know that that's been a lot of controversy around the country, the past couple years in particular. But I think it's worth a worthwhile starting point. I'm going to talk very briefly about Nebraska's income tax. When you're in a room full of experts and you're not an expert on a particular state, put yourself on shaky ground. But it was useful for us in doing this analysis to look at where Nebraska sat relative to other states, some of whom you might consider competitors, some of whom you consider peers of different sorts. And then finally, I would like to end my brief notes by talking about some of the challenges and trends that we see in income taxation. So this again is relatively broad brush in terms of what other states are grappling with. So very briefly, put us into context, and I know you've seen some of this material before, 41 states currently levy a broad-based income tax along with the DC government. Many of them choose to use the federal AGI as their starting point. So Nebraska, as many other states, coupled to the federal AGI as your starting point. I think your change was in 1987 when you left the federal taxable income definition and went to federal AGI. Eight states still use federal taxable income as the base. There's some debate and discussion in the tax administration world as to whether or not where a state couples saves very much in terms of administration. So does it save you any more? Does it save taxpayers any more in terms of compliance to go further down the tax scheduler or not? There's limited evidence that it is true. I thought it might be interesting, too, from the context of what you all are grappling with, to think about what the base of the state income tax actually looks like vis-a-vis the feds. So with federal AGI as many of our starting points, using IRS statistics of income data for 2010, 72.5% of that base is made up of wages. 2.3% is made up of taxable Social Security income. This is nationwide. 6.7% is taxable pensions and annuities, and other income, including C-Corp, S-Corp, other flow-throughs, farm income, etc., makes up about 18.5% of federal AGI. So you see that the lion's share of the tax base is wage and salary income. And those components, the percentages that I have there, have remained relatively stable. We certainly did see an increase just before the dot-com bust, where capital income, so that last category, played a larger role than it does currently. On average, across the country, 32% of taxpayers are itemizers. Dave brought up the notion of being able to deduct corporate income taxes, same obviously holds for individual income taxes. In Nebraska, I believe that about just over 30% of Nebraska filers who file the federal income tax are itemizers. Now, the individual income tax, unlike Dave's corporate income tax, is really one of the workhorses of state and local finance. This simple graph shows you the change in individual income tax revenue divided by total state revenue for periods of time over the last couple decades. And the graph looks more dramatic than it actually is if you look at the numbers underneath. In 1995, you saw that the individual income tax constituted about 31.5% of state government tax revenues. It boomed in 2000 up to 36%, and part of that was the increase in capital that was flowing through into federal AGI. And then during the recession and afterwards, we saw a little bit of a drop off in the ability of the state income tax to harness revenue, in large part with the reduction in capital income, but also wage and salary income itself through the recession. So big question, I think, is why have an income tax? And states are looking at this quite seriously, probably more seriously than they have in about 20 years. What I'd like to do is sort of talk the pros and the cons, and being the good economist, they're going to look an awful lot alike. So our pros are very similar to our cons, but I'll try to make some relevance out of it. The income tax as a base is elastic, which means that as income grows, tax revenues grow, but that's a function of how we define the tax base and what we tax. But it helps state and local governments to know that their tax system can continue to produce revenue as their economy grows. The income tax can be progressive in its distribution, and just say can be progressive, that's a state policy choice, and we know that some states have chosen to have relatively flat rates, other states, California in particular, most recently, have quite progressive rates in the system. John this morning talked about the property tax, and I think one of the questions was, are there progressive property taxes by statute? And I don't know of any in the country. The individual income tax is typically where we talk about equity if the state chooses to include that discussion in their revenue system. The income tax can be relatively neutral in its effects on economic decisions. We talk about this notion of if you put a tax into place and it makes people do things differently than they otherwise would have, or makes corporations do things differently, economists don't like that. We call that tinkering with the economy in such a way that if you're making choices differently than you would have without the tax, then somebody's losing something someplace. You know, are we losing the way that we would like to consume? Are we forcing companies to produce their technology in a certain way because of the tax system? And Dave also just mentioned that vis-a-vis tax incentives and what those might do. The income tax can raise, I say, quote unquote, enough revenue to meet expenditure needs. We know that that's a decision of you all, how much you want particular revenues to raise. But the fact is, the income tax has been around for a long time. It would be very hard to replace this revenue source wholesale if you were looking for a very different type of tax to use. You probably don't need any anecdotes, but I will tell you some of the work that we've done in other countries. One of my most favorite taxes that local governments in Russia said they were sure was going to raise a ton of revenue, it was the beard tax, you know, for men. So they were deciding whether or not to bring back the old beard tax. I would not recommend that in Nebraska. The tax, as mentioned, is deductible at the federal level. So for any individual who does itemize their federal tax returns, whatever they pay in income tax to the state, they do get a little bit of a reduction in their income tax for the federal government. It's not necessarily appropriate to say that they're getting money back from the feds, but it does reduce their overall tax burden. And just a very quick example, I'm sure you all are real familiar. If federal AGI is $80,000 and at the end of the day, the income tax that you pay is $6,000 on that, so that your taxable income for the federal purposes is $74,000 at a federal tax rate of 30%, if you are allowed to take the deduction, your tax for the feds is $22,200. Without the deduction, your tax to the feds would be $24,000, so you quote-unquote save $1,800 or 30% of your state income tax because of that federal deduction. And love to hear your wisdom on this, but I don't think the feds are going to be getting rid of this deduction anytime soon, even with the discussions at the federal level. But there's the other hand. So the famous on the one hand, on the other hand, some of the difficulties of the income tax, very much because it's elastic, because it responds to the economy, it goes down when times go down too. I don't think anybody has to be reminded of the last couple of recessions and how much state and local governments and the federal government have struggled. The tax, if it's too progressive, and please don't ask me to define true anytime soon, but if it's too progressive, then it can be a deterrent to economic development, it can affect migration, and impose other distortions in the system. There's the potential for what we call bracket creep due to inflation. And I believe that in Nebraska's income tax system, you do not index the tax brackets. So that means if the economy grows and wages grow, but price levels also grow, you could be pushing taxpayers into higher income tax brackets, really with no change in their ability to consume or their ability to pay. That's remedied through, in part through indexing the tax brackets. The income tax can be used to give special preferences as well, and I put this purposely as a on a separate page because some people consider this a pro of the income tax and some people consider it a con of the income tax. And then finally, taxpayers in some places feel that compliance with the income tax can be cumbersome and expensive. I think that criticism is typically levied more at the federal income tax, not so much at the state income tax, but there's a potential argument for it. This real simple graph, I wanted to just remind us of this notion of the buoyancy or the natural growth in the income tax, looks at income tax revenue divided by personal income. So I've taken a slightly different version of what Dave was looking at for the corporate income tax to give us some notion of both what's happened to the income tax, state income tax revenues relative to personal income. If you think of personal income as the ability to pay, so where the money's going to come from to pay taxes, over time. And what's quite obvious there is that you see a slow growth in the individual income tax revenue relative to personal income for Nebraska. I put Georgia up there. I can tell you a little bit about what's going on with us. And then for the U.S. And then it's quite hard hit, obviously, when the recession comes. So you see the big dip after the 2000, around the 2000, and then the very big dip around the most recent recession. So it's got fluctuation with the economy. When you look at the level of fluctuation, in particular around the 2000 recession, it's something to grapple with. It's something that will cause states problems. Now, if we look at a typical individual income tax system, many of us are quite familiar with what goes into devising an income tax. Most of the base, as I just mentioned, is wages. But states have, over the past many, many years of talking about income taxes, have looked at defining their tax bases different ways. Some states couple much more closely to the feds by taking federal taxable income. Some states previously, when I was with you back in the 1980s, it was a little bit more in fashion that states were coupling to federal tax liability. So just taking the bottom line of the feds, multiplying it by a tax rate, and going from there. Most states over the last 20 years have increased their autonomy and their control of their income taxes by going up the tax form a little bit, and including you all to federal AGI. Exemptions and deductions are a large part of the definition of state income tax policy. How many deductions, how many exemptions, what their purpose is, how large you want them, whether you index those for inflation, which I think you do for your basic exemptions. And then brackets and rates. When we talk about the individual income tax being a potential component of the equity side, or answering potentially for you the equity part of your tax system, brackets and rates are very important. Flat, progressive, fat rates, thin rates, how many? And then finally credits at the end of the system. A lot of states have increasingly used tax credits on their individual income tax to support all sorts of things. Educational expenditures, adoption credits. We see credits for contributions of different sorts. Lots of different reasons that credits have crept into the system. One of my friends, who actually works in Washington, said, he views tax policy now as social policy. So we can see, you know, what states and what the federal government values by looking at the credits and exemptions. Now for Nebraska, you all have made some interesting changes lately. Coupled to the federal AGI, and you have four tax brackets, which as of 2014, I believe, the lowest bracket will be 2.46, and the top bracket right now will be 6.84. Fairly standard deductions and credits. Standard or itemized deductions. You have certain treatment for capital gains, which is not out of the ordinary. Child and dependent care credit, earned income tax credit, elderly and disabled credit, angel investment, and some others. So you have made decisions on these types of credits and deductions to allow. Now, Mayor Jane said, or suggested, one of the things Dave and I do is, to the extent we could, to give you some idea of what the context of Nebraska systems look like relative to the U.S. And it's very tough to do in the right way, right, to provide the accurate information that's very useful. So I'm going to present some numbers and then tell you why they're not all that interesting. The average number of brackets, if you look across all of the states that have an income tax and just simply count off the number of brackets and the rates that they have, 4.8 brackets on average. Some states have one bracket, they have a flat rate. 12 is the maximum right now, I think, in Hawaii. So in Hawaii, there are 12 brackets. The implicit personal exemptions, when I looked at the value of your personal exemptions, you do it for credit, it's actually right in the middle of what most states are currently doing. On the rate differentials, the average first rate, if we just looked across all states that have an income tax, where your first tax rate is 2.4%, the average state has a 2.63% first bracket tax rate. And the top tax rate on average across the U.S. is 6.57, where yours is sitting at 6.84. The clawback provision that you all have in your system that reduces the benefit of the lower tax brackets, that's a little bit more unique. There are a couple of states that have different forms of that. So if I had to pick one thing that has Nebraska sticking out a little bit, I would choose that one. But now, you look at these brackets, and somebody should say to me, well, big deal, you know, doesn't it matter where those brackets fall? Doesn't it matter if the top rate starts at 100,000 or 200,000? And that's exactly the case. So what I did, and I want to put a note of caution with the numbers that are on the bottom of this slide. The National Bureau of Economic Research has a real nifty tool on their website. It's called the NBER Tax Sim Model. And any of us can go to that website and we can run the model, and it will run the state tax code that we choose and tell us a series of pieces of information about our state taxes. So according to NBER, so this is for 2011, and I will apologize, I don't have the most recent tax code in there, so the numbers that you're seeing are a little bit higher than they would be under current law for Nebraska. But the average marginal tax rate from that system in Nebraska is 6.49, and for the US, it's 4.64. So what this model does is it gets rid of the nonsense of saying, I have five brackets, but they're all, you know, within $2 of each other, or I have 100 brackets, and they're all within millions of dollars of each other. This is an estimate that says if we increased AGI by 1% in the model, how much tax, what is the marginal tax rate that would face the average person using, it's actually IRS data, so statistics of income data. So this suggests the marginal tax rate in Nebraska is a little bit higher than average in the US. If we looked at a different statistic, so we took the average tax rate in the same sort of calculation, just taxes paid divided by personal income, then you see Nebraska is quite similar to the US average. 3.84%, where the U.S. average would be 3.32 for state income taxes. And in reading some of the discussions that you all have had and some of the literature that's out there, the debate that you have gone through, this comes through the debates that I have read. There's a concern that the upper income end is taxed a little bit higher than your neighbors and others, and these data seem to support that. And whether it's enough to make a difference, we can talk about a little bit. What I wanted to focus on for the last few minutes that I have specifically with you are some general issues and trends that we see in individual income tax. So if you believe that there's a role for the individual income tax in Nebraska, if you believe that the cons outweigh the pros and there isn't a reason for it, you'll see some of the debate that's gone on with other states. Rate differentials and this whole notion about economic development and the effects that differences in tax rates have on behavior has driven a lot of state choices across the country, especially in the last couple of years. And Dave's table in one of the last exercises that he worked through with you to show you when you consider tax brackets, when you consider tax rates, when you consider deductibility, the margins get pretty small between states. So even slide up here a couple seconds ago, if Nebraska's marginal tax rate, average marginal tax rate is 2 percentage points different than the US average, that's not inconsequential. Question is that enough to really induce much behavior? So we'll kind of keep that in the back of our head. Labor and capital are mobile, we know. Capital is typically thought to be more mobile than labor. If we take consideration of everything else that goes on in our state and local finance, are these tax differentials enough to make things change? And the evidence on that, I think Dave said it, find your economist, find the one that you like, and you can find whatever answer you want, unfortunately. You should probably throw me out of the room for that statement, but what we have found is that attempts to look at this empirically, determine whether or not high-income people migrate because of tax rates, whether or not firms are moving because of tax rates, really, really tough for us to find consistent evidence. So this first paper, and in the PowerPoint slides, I included the references to these for folks who are interested. The first paper is a focus on New Jersey, where there was a fairly specific sort of experiment that was run on high-income earners. And these researchers found that there was no evidence that the higher tax rate on millionaires actually net of everything else, including what the governments were spending money on, what the other parts of the tax system looked like, what commuting costs were, what housing costs were, what all of these other, all else held equal pieces are, they found no evidence, no discernible evidence of the higher tax rate affecting migrants, millionaire migrants between out of New Jersey. This next study, Davis and Paluto, do find an impact of migration on high-income people using a different study, a different look. That study, I think, does not do as good a job of holding all these other things constant. There's little reference to, for instance, housing prices and some other components. But there, you know, lots of evidence on both sides. But in most cases, I think that the literature suggests that the effects, if they're there, are pretty small when we consider all of this other stuff, how state and local governments are spending their money, cost of housing, etc. Some of the other big issues that have come up in other state discussions, one refers to demographics and what's happening to, in particular, elderly population growth. Not only is my husband an economist, my dad used to like to come around and hear me talk about taxes. And after a talk, he would always say, why are you always picking on old people? So we would have this discussion about the elderly population growth. But what happens in a lot of our states, we know that we're seeing a larger increase in the number of elderly. Nebraska, from the census data I looked at, is not as dramatic as a lot of states, but that population, elderly population baby boom is coming. So states have engaged in an economic development argument around elderly. Do we want to attract elderly to our state by lowering income taxes, or are the costs of caring for elderly higher than the benefits that we would get from the economic development perspective? And this picture, I'm sure you've seen these versions, these population pyramids. On top, we see the United States, and the bottom two graphs are for Nebraska. It looks at the distribution of population, male and female, from low ages to the higher ages, and just shows you the concentration. So when you have a nice, strong pyramid, it means that there's a lot of young people to support the elderly population. We know from Social Security debates and others, what's happening is that we're going from a nice pyramid to more of a rectangle shape. And you see that for Nebraska as well. So on the left is 2000, and on the right is 2020 or 2025. And 33 states currently have income tax exclusions specifically for the elderly, and we're finding that the cost of those are getting quite substantial. And if I can, I wanted to mention Georgia's recent change. A couple years ago, our outgoing governor passed legislation that would basically eliminate the cap on the exclusion for elderly retirement income. So effectively, when it was fully phased in, there would be no taxation of retirement income of elderly in Georgia when it phased in. As we looked at the numbers on that harder and harder, it was obvious that the cost of that was going to grow quite substantially. So in 2012, they decided to cap that exemption. So it's now capped at $65,000. And I just couldn't resist this quote from the Kentucky Tax Reform Commission is now a couple years old. But when they were looking at the recommendation to reduce their pension income exemptions, a retiree reportedly came and testified, and he quotes, that he and his wife make over $100,000 and don't pay a nickel in state income taxes. He said, that's representation without taxation, and that's wrong. It's probably the same guy going around the country. Michigan has already been grappling with this as well, and what they did, I thought it was kind of interesting, is they tiered in their exemption. So those who were born before 1946, they basically held harmless in terms of the exclusion that they gave those elderly, and what they did was they reduced the exemption amounts for the younger elderly. So as you got younger in terms of your retiree population, there was less there going on. One other point about kind of the landscape for income tax, big question is whether the income tax as an instrument of state revenue can capture what's going on with the economy. We know that while labor is somewhat less mobile, technology is entering all sorts of industrial development, right? In agriculture and manufacturing and service sector, we see an increase in technology and capital at the expense of using labor. And capital as a, what we call tax handle, which you can get your hands around and actually collect, capital is a tough tax handle. Okay? Labor is an easier tax handle, like it or not, I'm not talking about equity right now, but labor is an easier tax handle. The growth in employment is expected across the country, including Nebraska, if these data are accurate for Nebraska, in health and other services more than in other sectors. So those are also tough sort of tax handles. Oops. And then finally, I wanted to just mention, because this I know is a discussion in Nebraska as well as other states, what is the future role of the income tax and this notion of flatter rates and broader bases, what might it bring to the table in terms of tax policy? Well, there is some evidence, not big, not a lot, but there is some evidence that broader bases and lower rates do reduce administrative costs and compliance costs. And just the natural order of things of how much paper we have to put together and what the tax administration has to look after. Flatter rates, so when we don't differentiate the rates, it is true that at the margin, you're reducing the ability for you know, bad stuff to go on, for arbitrage and other things to go on at the margins. How much is possible for a state income tax to have those sorts of impacts? Quite different from federal income tax, right? If you're at a top federal rate of 39.6% and you see that go down to half of that, that's a big increase in your net income. For states to step down from 6% to 4% or whatever it might be, we're not sure that the benefits of that reduction outweigh the other parts, the other costs of individuals or corporations making changes, moving, changing their portfolios, changing the way that they do business. And this notion of having a consumption tax swap as a possibility and reduce the or eliminate the income tax, Given that we, who are supposedly your professionals in this field, do not feel comfortable telling you or advising about how much of an impact that might have, it's a whole lot of money to put on the table, you know, all at once to make a swap for an income tax, wholesale for some other tax. And I'd like to just point out at the end here of my presentation, there's some references or resources from which I took a lot of this information, and hopefully those might provide a little bit of additional information.